right, good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, March 2nd, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everyone. We made it halfway. It is 21 degrees and still kind of snowing here in upstate New York. We had a system blow through yesterday. It definitely wasn't as bad as it looked. We had every color of the rainbow on the radar. There was green, yellow, orange, purple, pink, and blue. It was pretty incredible. All in a spectrum between New York State and Canada. It was beautiful. But I thought we were going to get an ice storm. It kept getting to me, and then it would kind of spread out again, and we just got an inch maybe. So, you know what? Upstate New York and an inch of snow will survive. Spring is coming soon anyway, so I'm pretty excited. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show, Two Devolution Studies Unquestioningly Following Authority. We looked at a few really disturbing things. One, of course, was the good old Milgram experiment that they've redone again and tested out to see how people would react if they were given orders and then thought that they were actually carrying out those orders, even to the extent where people were injured at the receiving end of those orders. People still, the majority of them followed orders blindly. But the story before that was even more disturbing, I think, because it was a study on how people blindly follow authority figures, but in this case it was a robot. And it had even been proven before the experiments happened in a couple different ways that the robot was defective. It was an emergency robot. They had had the robot give wrong instructions or seem broken or whatever. And then they faked a fire and they had this emergency robot flashing bright lights that said emergency, emergency, and waving white arms pointing toward a back door closet or something in the middle of a fire. And every single one of the participants in that study, every single one of them that were there in person, not when they did the experiment on the computer too, and there were different results, but in person, in the heat of the moment, when they really thought that it was an emergency, regardless of the fact whether or not they knew that robot was broken, they followed the directions. That's very disturbing to me because that proves that we have been conditioned, and it's very hard to break conditioning. Conditioning is like an addiction. You know, we talk about addictions all the time. Our favorite is dopamine because we're addicted to dopamine everywhere with all of our 21st century devices. But being dependent is also an addiction, at least from my observations. Not thinking for yourself is being lazy, but you become dependent upon those who think for you, right? They become your second brain. And as you don't exercise your brain anymore, it gets flabby. Then you always depend upon someone else to do your thinking. And they want us to be that way because ever increasingly our devices are going to be augmenting our ability to think, right? I saw a study, I think I might have linked it yesterday. I don't know. My bifocals don't work too well in the morning. My eyes are half closed and the lights are too bright. It's hard. It's hard to look. I'm doing the head up, down, up, down, up, down to get it just right. There was a story that not only, that not only had talked about how we now have the attention span of a goldfish. I mean, I've talked about this story so many times. This was actually a Microsoft study that proved that it was our devices that caused us to go from 9 seconds to 6 seconds. And I mean, even back in the late 90s when I was doing technical training, it's 1700 people I was responsible for every month, coast to coast, California, Toronto, Buffalo, and Miami. Those were my four places, 1700 salespeople. And I had to do training, and there was trainings that were local, obviously, because I was in Buffalo. And then the other three locations were remote, and we did that online back in the mid 90s. We still had online training software. I could give presentations very easily. We had point-to-point T1s. But what was so incredible is that back in those days, you know, we were just trying to get people sucked into the machine. We did all these classes on concepts of adult learning. And I think at that time, the time that you had to get a point across was like 7 minutes or something is what we were taught. And it was the time between commercials on TV. Now we're down to about 6 seconds. And if you take a look back from like 1996, 1997 maybe, to what our digital lives were like back then, now let's fast forward. I mean, is that literally, wait, 90s, 16? That's, is that 20 years? Wait, yes. That's 20. Oh my God, has that been another 20 years gone by? Oh, so let's say 1996 to 2016. I can't believe it's 20 more years. Oh my God. Like that literally was just yesterday. So I guess, wow, I can't even believe it. It's 20 years. All right, so 20 years now from what our online lifestyle had been back in the late 90s. When we had our first crossover to consumeristic getting on the internet, dumb end users learned what Windows 95 was. Plug and play, quotation marks. That promise never really happened. I mean, it was better than it used to be, but you know, we only had a few modes of interaction still at that time. I remember back in those days, but this is because I worked for a tech company, a tech distributor. I mean, I had access to any hardware, any software you could possibly imagine. I could get my hands on anything that nobody could get their hands on. I mean, there still wasn't like online commerce really happening at that time. We were the back end. But I had a parallel port. It plugged into your printer port on your computer, black and white camera. And I had, oh, I don't even know, back in those days, maybe it was a 33.6 modem, dial-up modem. My sister lived in New York City, so I got us both one for Christmas 1 year. And we were using this old tool called ICQ. If you remember, it was a chat tool. But the one thing that you could do with that chat tool is get your IP address. There hadn't been a way for dumb end users to get your IP. So we literally would do video conferencing with these black and white cameras. And when you moved, you couldn't talk because, you know, the movement in the image would cut out the voice. So you could either talk or you could move. But then somehow we managed to figure out with that IP address how to install Quake on both of our computers, Network Quake. And we actually were able to play Networked Quake where we could see each other in the video game over a 33.6 modem back in 1996. I'm going to tell you, I mean, yeah, there were ways to communicate, but definitely not like we have now. You had email. I don't even know. And Facebook wasn't even a twinkle in anyone's eye. What was there back then? 96, you still had like Prodigy and things. Most businesses didn't even have websites yet. I mean, we still had to go to all the trade shows and get the newest cut sheet for all the new gear coming out. So when, you know, Best Buy or whatever, CompUSA called me and said, hey, what's in this, you know, what kind of switch is in this box? I'd be like, oh, I don't know. So you'd have to do it all manually still. Yeah, 1400. I still have my 9600 in my drawer in my junk computer parts drawer. So anyway, I'm totally off the beaten path. But back in those days, you know, there were only a few modes of communication. Email typically was it. You know, as things started to come online and you had chat apps and whatever, but you still didn't even really have mobile. I didn't have a cell phone back in those days. I had first started playing with, I think I mentioned back a week or so ago, HP came out with a PDA 1.0 monochrome. Thing was as big as like a brick, like literally the size. It wasn't as thick as, but it was as long as a brick. It was like your little pocket sub roll or something. But you know, I mean, there wasn't anything you could do with it. You didn't have wireless. You didn't have 802.11 wireless everywhere. You didn't have 3G cellular. So things still hadn't caught up. They even back in those days, you know, they'd come out with tablets back in the 90s, but tablets didn't fly either. People didn't like touch screen. Nobody saw a use for a tablet. Why would I need a tablet? And I still had my CRT monitor. There was no LCD except for on your notebook computer. And notebook computers in those days still cost like 26. Actually, I think 2600 was when they came down. They were probably like 3 grand. Texas Instruments, I think, had the cheapest notebooks at that time at Fujitsu. Anyway, so there really wasn't a lot of communicating going on between people. So the adult attention span, as we had learned, was about 7 minutes time between commercials because we were still focusing on the television as our point, single point of entertainment and information, and maybe a little bit of email, but not like this multi-point from every direction 24/7 to the point of overwhelming your brain where you can't even soak up facts anymore. And you know, I get to that point. I get to that point now between all the stuff that we do here with the network and all the shows and all the news. And I think I just saw the other day, I literally have 22. I thought it was only like 10, but maybe Facebook said it was 22 pages that I admin on Facebook, which I don't even know how that's possible, but maybe. And then the whole Pigmind project, all the news, all the sorting, all the playlists, the websites, whatever. And you know, I try and catch the news every day, at least to hit the headlines. And I got to tell you, there's been so much insanity over the last, I don't know, I said 48 hours. Someone in chat last night said, no, it's been the last 2 weeks. All I know is that there has been so much going on. And then add to that the election mayhem, craziness, circus. I can't even, like, I can look at the headlines and 99% of them don't even register anymore. Is it because I'm overwhelmed? Is it because we've seen it all before and we know that it's just a bunch of lies and circuses? What is it? Is it that our brain chemicals are so overwhelmed? And I mean, I think we had done some stories on this way back quite a few months ago about how when information comes faster and faster, your memory gets worse and worse. And I wonder if that isn't part of what they're trying to do. They don't want us. You know, when you have the circus like the, I was going to call it Fat Tuesday, Super Tuesday yesterday, and all the insanity and the punching back and forth in the comments, and then they slip a Willy in somewhere in the background. Like, I don't know, were we test firing nuclear missiles off of California the other day? Oh, yes. You know what? We were. But hey, nobody saw that one. I don't know. If anybody wants to hit those headlines, be my eyes and ears. Go to www.pigmynews.com. That website is a work of art. That's something we spent a couple years building, tweaking, tooling. That actually is the same framework as UCY, just tweaked differently. But scroll down to the bottom, you will see the first 50 headlines. Hit scroll or load more, and you'll see the next 50. It's at least a good way, since I haven't been able to do it as well as I should be, it's a good way to keep up on at least what lunacy is going around. So you guys could give me a hand there. Tip me off when you see something I should be paying attention to. So anyway, back to digital dependence whittling away at human memory. So we did do a story on this. So not only has the attention span gone from like 7 minutes in the 90s to about 9 or 6 seconds now, less than that of a goldfish because of our devices, but digital dependence is, quote, eroding human memory. An over-reliance on using computers and search engines is weakening people's memories, according to a study. It has showed that many people use computers instead of memorizing information. Many adults who could still recall their phone numbers from childhood could not remember their current work number or the phone numbers of family members. Maria Wimber of the University of Birmingham said the trend of looking up information, quote, prevents the buildup of long-term memories. And remember, they've been doing heavy-duty research into the brain, the development of the brain, the development of memories, how to suck those memories out, how to implant new memories. And I mean, that is no longer stuff of science fiction. So if they can figure out how to get us to forget things, and then they find an easy way to put things back in there, wouldn't that be such a useful tool for the unruly masses that are going to find themselves here very shortly without jobs because the robots took them all and on some sort of guaranteed income to make them happy as the world turns into an apocalypse around them. Didn't we read that yesterday? We did. We read that yesterday. Oh, the study, which examines the memory habits of 6,000 adults in the UK, France, Germany, Italy, Spain, Belgium, the Netherlands, and Luxembourg, found more than one third would turn first to their computers to recall information instead of using their own brains. But the survey suggests relying on a computer in this way has a long-term impact on the development of memories because such push-button information can often be immediately forgotten. Our brain appears to strengthen a memory each time we recall it, and the same time we forget irrelevant memories that are distracting to us. You know, I have a friend who just can't believe with all, you know, I multitask a lot. And as I'm working on 10 other things, I'm probably having a conversation with somebody. You know, it's not hard to do. 20 years in the tech industry. It's even been longer than that now. So I was in the middle of my career 20 years ago. So I don't know, 30, 25 here. I'm still young. 25 years in the tech industry. And I did like 5 years of those were calling tech support. Oh my God. Looking up products, doing troubleshooting was just horrible. You know, you get pretty good at your fingers, both hands working independently and the brain and the mouth working independently. And they're all doing things and the eyes all bouncing around multiple monitors. You get good at that. You know, it was a lot of years of training, but my friend just gets like almost like nose out of joint. Well, maybe something that was said 5 weeks ago at 3 o'clock in the morning. Wow, I really, all I want to do is go to bed and I got six more things to do. Like maybe I don't remember. With what? You don't remember? I told you all about it. And you know, it's really hard because that's one of those memories. Like if you're telling me about how you made miso soup or something, and you were giving me the ingredients at 3 a.m. and telling me exactly how to saute something, I don't know. You know, it was interesting at the time, but that was something that was an irrelevant memory compared to maybe the other stuff I was working on that went by the wayside. Anyway, she says, and that was a dumb example, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know, I've noticed that exact thing. When there are things that are being told to me and I am focused on something else, and especially if it's just chitter-chatter and conversation, it's not a factoid that I'm going to need at some point in the future, maybe, to save my life. You know, it's not a factoid that I'm going to have to retrieve at some point to win a game, the $1 million on Jeopardy. It was just idle conversation. Anyway, but see, I'll tell you what I worry about, though. Kids in school that are learning, and there is just so much distraction at all points in time now, and they're doing all kinds of weird things. You know, they're doing Common Core shit. They're doing computer learning. Google is inserting questions at the ends of their online tests. You have obnoxious children sitting next to your kid starting trouble. And as these kids get distracted, I'm already finding that there are things that, you know, you got to reinforce 10, 12, 15 times at home because they are not getting that reinforcement in the babysitting circus they call school. It's disappointing because we used to do a lot of repetition if I remember correctly, especially with like our multiplication tables and whatever, man, they pounded that stuff into your head. You memorized things. There was no calculator. There was no lookup table. I mean, there was in the very beginning, but then that went away. You know, we did trigonometry by hand in those days. You didn't have $300 scientific calculators that mommy and daddy bought you back in the 1980s because nobody had the money to do that. Anyway, back about this recalling information and forgetting irrelevant memories, this researcher says that the process of recalling information is a, quote, very efficient way to create permanent memories. In contrast, passively repeating information, such as repeatedly looking it up on the internet, does not create a solid, lasting trace in the same way. And, yeah, there was something else that we had learned was the concepts of adult learning. There are all kinds of different ways that people learn things, and one is hands-on. Now, you know, I did training for seasoned salespeople, so we would just do our monthly updates on all the new technologies and products coming, but I also did the new hire training, and that was an 8-week class that people had to take with me. I wrote the manual on that, too. I had my whole new hire training manual. I might even have a copy here somewhere still. 8 weeks you had to spend with me every single day for 4 hours. I did the morning, and then our sales team, teaching them how to sell things, did the afternoon for 4 hours. And yes, imagine that, 8 weeks, 4 hours a day with me, locked in a room. And it was all right. We had 30-some-odd people per class. But I taught salespeople who had previously worked at Banana Republic. By the end of that 8 weeks, they were building their own PCs. But, you know, I discovered that there were a lot of ways that people learn. And some people would be like literally tears after class. Oh, Jewel, I can't do this. And I'm like, look, you can do this. Because I didn't know any of this stuff. I taught myself this stuff. And I didn't even have like the world of online to look stuff up back in those days. I didn't have anybody who knew what they were doing in those days. You just, you know, trial and error and you figured it out. So we'll read it. And if you don't get it, then we'll do illustrations. And if you don't get it, I'll do drawings. And if you don't get it, then we'll bring out hardware and I'll make you do it. And by the end, I'll tell you, I never had one person who was unhappy, one person that was uneducated by the end of that class. It was awesome. But you got to make sure that you use all the different ways that people can learn. And that's what this research is also finding. You know, one thing about learning is a lot of it is tactile or sensory. You have to see, hear, taste, smell, touch, right? That's how we, as biological computers, get our input. And they're discovering now that this new way, quote unquote, new way of learning things, looking things up, you're not learning anything. It's not imprinting on you at all. Among adults surveyed in the UK, 45% only could recall their home phone number from age 10. I still remember mine because guess what? It's still the same. While 29% could remember their own children's phone numbers. Wow, that's frightening. And only 43% could remember their work number. The ability to remember a partner's number was lower in the UK than anywhere else. And a study from Kaspersky Labs, which is a security firm, said that people have become accustomed to using computer devices as an extension of their own brain. And that's where this whole augmented cognition comes in that we have talked about so many times. Now, I got a bunch of stories here talking about memory. We had discussed yesterday downloading robot personalities. And I don't know if everybody caught this yesterday, but maybe we'll catch the beginning of this again because then it gets into the whole DARPA challenge. We know all about that. We don't really care. Runaway screaming from any humanoid-looking robots. That's all I have to say. Google patent system that could one day download the personality of a celebrity or even a deceased loved one to a robot. We discussed this yesterday. They have been talking about uploading to the machine a couple days before, and now we're talking about downloading to the machine. It's all a part of that 2045 project. Google has developed a system to allow robots to download new personalities online, and the system would allow machines to download them in a similar way to an app and even have a different personality for each user. The patent says that the personality could replicate the robot's owner, a deceased loved one, or a celebrity. Google's patent details a cloud-based system. Again, we're talking about uploading and downloading ourselves to the cloud, where personality could be downloaded to a robot in the same way one might download an app. You can have a personality store. The robot personality may also be modifiable within a base personality construct to provide states or moods representing transitory conditions of happiness, fear, surprise, perplexion, and alarm, thoughtfulness, and derision, and so forth, states the patent. Friends will even be able to clone their robots and swap aspects of their personality. How frightening is that? Hopefully you don't have a stalker out there. They could get their creepy sex bot and just download your personality. And then you don't need to worry about the creepy guy who is stalking you. Friends will be able to clone their robots. The personality and the state may be shared with other robots so as to clone this robot within another device or devices. And that almost makes me think of the Wii. If you remember, in the Wii video game, you had the Mii, and you could swap Mii's with your friend's Wii's. I never actually did that, but my sister had a Mii. So anyway, back to this downloading of robot. In this manner, a user may travel to another city and download within a robot in that city the personality and state matching the user's home location robot. So basically, you could travel without traveling. You could appear without appearing just by uploading and downloading yourself into a robot in another location. The robot personality thereby becomes transportable or transferable. The firm also explains, quote, the disclosure relates to a robot imbued with a personality or personalities. And personality may be thought of as personification in a sense of human characteristics or qualities attributed to a non-human thing. Like, how scary is this? Robot can be programmed to provide a desired look as well as an interactability for the robot, which may be subject to change by the user or by the robot itself, such that the robot interface is customized to provide a desired personality for the robot. That sounds like a lot of legal mumbo jumbo. Google already owns several firms developing robotic technology, including the Atlas. Yes, Atlas. 6.2 feet of metal with plastic body that can run, walk, jump, and even open doors. And it is owned by Google. Now, even better than that, Atlas, I ran across this yesterday in Gizmodo, Australia. Atlas, the robot, can enlist in the U.S. military anytime it wants. When Alphabet was known as Google, the company bought Boston Dynamics, maker of the amazingly advanced robot named Atlas. And at the time, Google promised that Boston Dynamics would stop taking military contracts, as it often did. But here is the open secret about Atlas. It can enlist in the U.S. military anytime it wants. And we knew that this was part of the plan, guys, but now it's kind of out in the open. Technology transfer is a two-way street. Traditionally, we think of technology as being transferred from the public to the private sector, with the internet as just one example. The U.S. government invests in and develops all kinds of important technologies for war and espionage, and many of those technologies eventually make their way to consumers in one way or another. When the government does so consciously with both military and civilian capabilities in mind, it is called dual-use technology. Just think about this. We've talked about part of the Brain Project, and part of DARPA's interest in this was to create the super soldier. And one of the ways, not only doing brain implants, because remember, they can implant it in us, but also they have been talking about creating avatars. Having these robotic representations that could be controlled and manipulated by a soldier who was remote, whether it be like they're doing right now with remote controlling drones from a little room on the other side of the world and bombing people, or whether it be being able to control and manipulate some sort of robotic device that is carrying the weapon and moving into insurgent territory. You know, today it might be remote control. Tomorrow might be literally upload yourself into that device. And if you get blown up, hey, you're already saved in the cloud. So don't worry about it. We'll just download you into a new body. Again, if anyone's ever seen the new Battlestar Galactica, not the one from the 70s, that's exactly what happened every time you got killed. You just reincarnated with the same robot body and you downloaded different location. All right, anyway, so it's called dual-use tech when it's both military and civilian. And because a company might not actively pursue military contracts does not mean that the U.S. military cannot buy and perhaps improve upon technology that is being developed by private companies. That's something that they don't mention in here at all, is how many DARPA, former DARPA employees like DARPA Dan, and Regina Duggan, directors, have moved over to Google. Because, guess what? They're over there. DARPA Google, I call them DARPA Google, because they work in very close connection with each other. This article makes it sound like, oh, there's this tech company over here, and oh, there's the military over here. And if this tech company develops this technology, well, they could fill out a request for proposal and bid upon a contract for the military. And that is not how this relationship works. Don't let them fool you. I think we've documented that pretty well through past episodes. The defense community sees this more crucial than ever, as the government is spending on research and development has plummeted. Yeah, because you know why? Because they're sprinkling it all at these corporations and universities to get them to create the evil science. Then they spin it off to a private company, make lots of money on the IPO, and then get them to bid on the government contract. About one-third of R&D is being done by private industry in the U.S. now after World War II, and two-thirds have been done by the U.S. government, and now it is the reverse. In 2014, just after Boston Dynamics was acquired by Google, DARPA's director, and I can never say her name, Arati Prakabar, we've listened to a few interviews by her, was asked about whether the agency saw Google as a competitor, and I remember this interview, for developing high-tech machines, humanoid robots, or otherwise. And she says, quote, "Google and we are worried about the problems of the world." She's the same one that talked about unleashing the synthetic biology to test terraforming Mars here on Earth to clean up some of the horrifying pollution that we have. This is the same chick. She says, Google and we are worried about the problems of the world. They are going to try and go make money on it. And that's what they do as a private company. And we're going to try to deal with it from the perspective of national interest, says Prakabar. I want to harvest what they and many, many others are investing in and drive that technology forward. That term harvest, of course, means that they're going to use the off-the-shelf technology of any private company as they like. Off-the-shelf being technology that is available to practically anyone, and driving technology forward can easily mean building humanoid robots to help U.S. soldiers one day. And whether these robots carry guns or are involved in offensive capabilities of any kind of scares people, many of whom are only half-joking. I know I'm not. Are only half-joking when they make gifts of Atlas, getting fed up and destroying all of humanity. But it's not a joke. But it's an issue that society must grapple with very, very soon. The U.S. military was dissatisfied with versions of Boston Dynamics' Big Dog, the robotic pack mule that was way too loud for the battlefield. I mean, I don't see how being loud is a problem. I'm sure they could fix that after bazillions of dollars in investment. But Atlas is getting smarter and quieter with every new iteration. RAND Corporation recently released a study arguing that drones hadn't really changed warfare that much in the past two decades, and in some ways they were right. If you're a civilian on the ground, you really don't care if that person pulling the trigger is sitting in the plane above you or in a room in Nevada halfway around the world. The same could be said of robot warriors. If you're getting shot by a military machine, whether it's someone in a tank or a robot being controlled by someone in Nevada, ding, ding, it does not make much difference now, does it? The biggest concern for people of the future, whether it is aerial drones or gun-toting robots, is whether humans are out of the loop. And we've looked at that many times. There are lots of very smart people out there, lots of scientists and tech titans that are already questioning whether or not what we're doing is smart. Autonomous robots carrying weapons. But the big question is whether or not humans are out of the loop, whether or not we give robots autonomy and allow them to think for themselves. And the term out of the loop refers to humans using their programming to react to problems without the intervention of a human. And remember, that's called the algorithm. I think the algorithm, I was right. That has become the term for 2016. I see it everywhere. It's all about the algorithm. From RAND Corporation, quote, swarms of smart drones acting autonomously to overwhelm air defenses could prove to be truly transformative weapons. Yeah, I don't know if anyone's seen those swarm drones. They were practicing with that at MIT way, way back then. They were using, remember, they always study nature to figure out how to make these robots, and they were studying bees, trying to figure out how bees swarm. They figured it out now. Now they have little mini smart swarm drones. Swarms of smart drones acting autonomously to overwhelm air defenses could prove to be truly transformative weapons, but such capabilities, if they ever exist, wink, would be transformative because they're autonomous systems more than the unmanned platforms that carry them. That didn't make any sense. Will be transformative because they're autonomous systems. Oh, they're transformative because they are autonomous, not because they're platforms. Like, so not because it's a bomb or a gun or whatever. It's the fact that they're autonomous. The same can be said for humanoid drones. Autonomy is the key here. And the acquisition of systems built or being utilized by the defense community that allows for machines to make decisions is crucial to the U.S. military. We are now past that deliberative stage. And just because Boston Dynamics may not actively be coordinating with the U.S. military does not mean that we will not see fully autonomous Atlas warbots in our lifetime. Ding, ding, ding. In fact, it feels now more inevitable than ever. This past winter, this author saw robots drive cars, and know that's coming, right? We just found out last week the U.S. government gave the green light for Google's self-driving car to be a self-driving entity without human intervention. This past winter, I saw robot driving cars. Robots open doors, climb stairs, drill through walls. Just replace the power drill with a gun, and you've got the makings of a robot army. We joke about it now, given how comedically slow, and this is what I said, how comedically slow the robots of DARPA's robotics challenge were. Remember the music, as they're tripping over each other, and then remember seeing the unveiling of Atlas II. That was no bumbling robot. Thank you very much. That was all a psyop to keep you quiet for a while and let them sprinkle some more money around to all the best and the brightest universities and use our children to help build our future enslavers. So remember how comedically slow the robots of the DARPA's robotics challenge were, but what the world saw were merely the grandparents of the robot war machines that we will be seeing dispatched around the globe. Again, DARPA director Prekbar was more than happy to explain how the agency uses the innovations of private industry in a 2014 interview. She also explains that it wasn't just the American companies that they were relying on. No, Samsung. Remember, Samsung was a big friend of theirs as well. Samsung has their military division also. It is also an opportunity for us to not to have to invest only Department of Defense dollars to have phenomenally powerful technology, she said. They've sucked in the entire tech sector into our military, industrial, medical, precision medicine, rule the world, and make us all prisoner complex. When we use a semiconductor component from an Altera in a DoD military system, we get phenomenal advantage of riding off of the billions of dollars of their investments that have been made. And as long as private industry keeps making amazing things that DARPA and the broader defense and intelligence community can capitalize upon, it is seen as a dollar saved for us. And in just a few short years, an army of Atlases could be more affordable than ever. Let's just hope that we are ready, not just for the humanoid robots policing our streets and fighting alongside our soldiers. And guys, I mean, I've been saying this for how many years have I been on the air? And it sounded lunatic back 3 years ago. It doesn't sound so lunatic anymore, especially when we read that story last week about the Google self-driving car, and they were postulating in that story about whether or not they could be delivering Atlas robots with the cars when they show up. And let's just hope we're ready, not just for the humanoid robots policing our streets and fighting alongside soldiers. I would wager that there are a dozen papers being circulated in the Pentagon right now about what the hell we're going to do when Atlas robots are cheap enough to fight for terrorists such as ISIS. Dun, dun, dun. So chew on that one for a while. I don't know. That was a pretty shocking story. Not that I haven't thought about that one many, many times before, but to actually see it in a publication such as Gizmodo with some real postulation and pointing out the fact that, wow, it's right around the corner was very disturbing for me. So speaking of Google patents, yes, 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 Google is taking over the world. Google has another patent out there I ran across. This one's actually from 2009, but I ran across this because I found this new system that's being worked on. We talked about those dopamine headphones that are coming out here just next month that use some of the DARPA research into the vagus nerve, that ElectRx program they had that can stimulate with a little electrical impulse right inside your ear. Stimulate the vagus nerve to cause your brain to produce dopamine. You're going to be listening to music and getting as high as a kite, the story said. We looked into who was running it. Nirvana was the name of the corporation. And there were all kinds of people, very high tech, very deep into medicine. And as a matter of fact, two of the co-founders had done military contracts and had sprinkle money to develop their products in the past. One worked for Star Wars and the other one worked for thawing out frozen people. And they had both been doing some high-level projects with government entities. So don't think that those headphones are just a fluke. DARPA's been doing all kinds of research into the brain and with the soldiers trying to push chemicals, make them not afraid. Have them go into war and be animals. Yeah, so there's a patent, 2009, from Google titled Method and System for Brain Entrainment. All right, let's read about this one. This is the abstract. The present invention is a method for modifying music files to induce a desired state of consciousness. Now, we've talked about this. I've talked about, and we really should dig into this sometime, all the different wavelengths that your brain works on. I'd said that there were four. Actually, there's five, and there might even be a sixth that they've been working with now, either way high on the spectrum or way low on the spectrum. But remember, we're all analog, right? Our body works on frequencies. Our systems work on frequencies. Your brain works on frequencies. And DARPA, dotted line to Google, are working on cracking all those mysteries. I mean, the whole world is working on cracking the brain mysteries, but DARPA and especially DARPA Google have been working on cracking those mysteries. And we have a patent here by Google with an invention for modifying music files to induce a desired state of consciousness. First and second modulations are introduced into a music file such that when the music file is played, both of the modulations occur simultaneously. Additional modulations can be introduced as well as sound tones at window frequencies. Let's look a little bit at the background. As the information technology peaks in its new evolution to optimize our external living conditions, the next technology or applied science to improve human conditions should focus back toward inner capacity of the human being. Optimizing human conditions in mental and physical dimensions has been sought throughout history. And how interesting that Google has their life sciences division, Verily, which is where they're going to start working on nanobots in the blood. And oh, good old former director of the National Institute of Mental Health, Tommy Insel, just moved over there as of the end of last year with his goal being how to diagnose mental disorders through smartphone applications. Well, wouldn't it be amazing if they could treat those quote-unquote mental disorders using their special headphones where they've entrained music with certain frequencies to change our brainwaves? It's amazing, amazing, amazing that Google has a patent on this. With all the advancement of modern science and technology, this heavily sought goal can be realized and applicable for a wide spectrum of the population. This present invention includes safe and effective ways to improve brain function, and the present invention uses digitally edited music files to entrain the listener's brain functions toward more efficient and healthier brain functions simply by listening to one's favorite music. Brain entrainment is to change one's brain state to a desired brain state by experiencing an entrainment method. And the idea of brain entrainment has been used throughout our history as well as our daily living. And I mean, yeah, you can do your own brain entrainment by doing something as simple as heavy breathing with your eyes closed, relaxation techniques, yoga, meditation, you know, drink some alcohol, smoke some pot. You're going to change the way your brain works and put yourself into a different mental state. I mean, just listen to some of your favorite music. I've said this for a long time. We talked about this. I actually have a story on it. Music is very important, and it does affect our brains. But the fact that we're going to have someone like Google, reprogramming music with tones or whatever to be able to cause brain entrainment, and who the hell knows what else, what whispering things they're putting into our minds. Nobody cares. Jump off the bridge. I mean, this is just frightening to me. Brain entrainment is to change one's brain state to a desired brain state by experiencing an entrainment method. And the idea of brain entrainment, of course, has been used throughout history as well as our daily living. Listening to music, watching a movie, dancing, playing sports, meditation, reading, drinking coffee or alcohol, enjoying a hobby, etc. are some examples that we use to change our brain state to a quote-unquote desired state. The benefits of listening to music in improving mood, attention, and stress reduction have been well validated by numerous scientific studies. In the present invention, special combinations of subtly noticeable sound effects on music of personal preference are introduced. And the listener usually does not even notice the effects, but the brain of the listener perceives the special effects subconsciously. The special sound effects carry specially arranged multiple frequencies resonating with target brain oscillation networks. Ding, 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 ding. The goal of the special effects is to activate the whole brain to work more harmoniously and efficiently for a targeted task. And by experiencing or listening the specially edited music repetitively, the listener's brain becomes more balanced, efficient, and healthier as the new patterns become ingrained in one's brain, habituated, learned, and formed neuroplasty. And I have a big story about neuroplasty and them being able to reprogram children's brains after they've been taught some bad behaviors, but I don't know if we're going to get to that today. We might have to get to that tomorrow. The present invention incorporates its unique entrainment methods to maximize natural synchronous activations of the whole brain to induce optimal brain states for target task activity. Other entrainment methods mostly try to maximize a dominant brain state for a target task activity by using entrainment driven by frequency or frequencies representing the dominant brain state, and the effective entrainment is achieved by using strong intensity of entrainment frequencies. One possible problem in using strong intensity is that the strong intensity may coerce some oscillators into oscillating in frequencies other than their innate natural frequencies by the brute force of entrainment. And this may result in an unnatural target brain state. This would be called a malfunction. This would be called, like, get people angry instead of relaxed. And they can be unnatural target brain states, preventing the whole brain from working as one harmonious system. Guys, I'm telling you what, we have not been off at all ever in the stuff that we've talked about. It's just that science hadn't caught up to us yet, and now it is. They actually even have the different levels that I was talking about. There's delta, theta, alpha, beta, gamma, and then there's fast and ultra fast. Delta is 0.5 to 4 hertz. Theta is 4 to 8 hertz. Alpha is 8 to 14 hertz. Beta is 12 to 30 hertz. Gamma 30 to 80 hertz, fast 80 to 200 hertz, and ultra fast 200 to 600 hertz. Wow, that probably would make your brain short circuit at that high of a level. Maybe we'll dig into some of these brain states tomorrow, because they're all listed out here. Detailed description of the invention and the achievement of specified brain states. Yeah, you know what? I'm going to save this right here because I want to get to one more story, and we only got a couple more minutes. Speaking about entrainment, putting you into the right frame of mind to learn things. Yes, it's coming. Take the red pill. Researchers develop matrix-style brain stimulator that instantly teaches skills. Did you guys catch this one yesterday? Researchers exploring the world of neuroscience are venturing deep down the rabbit hole, creating what they claim is a new brain stimulator that can instantly improve an individual's ability to learn. Now, if you guys remember, I think it was an original Star Trek, Captain Kirk, he went to a planet and got into this thing. I think it was supposed to be Bones, but I think Kirk did it and downloaded all their history into his head. I think they did it in The Matrix too. Anyway, The startling news comes from HRL Laboratories, which compared the new device technology depicted in the movie The Matrix that showed highly advanced software instantly teaching the character Neo advanced martial arts. And in this case, they sought to transfer the skills of a professional airplane pilot to those who did not know how to fly a plane. And I actually am going to give this a shot in the last 2 minutes. If my stuff connects, we are going to listen to their video about enhancing training through neurostimulation. Maybe.
What if becoming an expert?
Hello.
And it's pilot were as simple as putting on a cap.
This is the same issue, so forget it. We can't play this. Damn. You know what? Well, we got, they got back onto us. They're like, oh, they played a video one day. We got to block it again. Anyway, let's finish reading this. We got 1 minute. Researchers led by Dr. Matthew Phillips analyzed brain activity patterns of 6 commercial and military pilots. And after mapping out their brain activity, the team used transcranial direct current stimulation to transmit these patterns onto novice subjects as they learned to pilot an airplane in a realistic flight simulator. Subjects, and how interesting, again, it's flight simulation. That's where it all started. When I saw the very first military DOD video game skewed on our system into distribution 20-some-odd years ago, it was Flight Simulator. When the 32 novice pilots sat down to take their flight simulator tests, researchers used low current stimulations to duplicate the brain activity seen in the professional pilots, even delivering placebo signals to ensure the accuracy of the results. And nevertheless, the researchers at HRL are excited at this potential because they had shown that some of these people actually did learn faster by having their brain zapped with the brain waves of those pilots. Subjects who received brain stimulation via electro-embedded head caps improved their piloting abilities, said HRL in a statement. Dun, dun, dun. So the learning machine is here. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. I can't believe it's already over. It is Wednesday. Ms. Lonnie Clark is live up next. Tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern, Josh live. 8, the boys from New York, continued condition. 9, Liam Schiff's show, brand new. And 9, 11, Answer Media with Nick and DB. Have a good day, guys. I'll catch up with you tomorrow. Take care.